Then we come to the sons of Lewis, and we have George Perriman.
George was the youngest of the three. He was very involved in tribal government, especially in local affairs here around Tulsa. He married a woman named Rachel Alexander. Her family has a history of their own, and it's from Rachel, who was a full-blood and Lutchboga, that we get our identity as members of Lutchboga and as members of the Beaver Clan, because Muscogee tradition is that you follow the maternal line. George remained very active. Like I said, he was the younger of the three. His brothers had been soldiers during the Civil War. He wound up being one of the major cattle forces in the area. His herds would run as far east as Choteau and as far south as Mounds. There was a time in the period after the Civil War where the Muscogee Nation was having trouble with the Texans who were driving cattle from Texas to the railroads in Kansas. And the trouble was that the nation had a grazing tax that they applied to these herds as they came through, and the Texans were refusing to pay. So the nation entered into an agreement with several families, and the Perrimans were just one of them, to actually lease the land from Tulsa to Choteau in wide strips and fence it off so that the Texans could not cross those fences without paying their permit tax to the tribe. So the Perrimans and several other families, as a result of that, were effectively collecting taxes off of Texans to turn into the tribal government.
But George and Aunt Rachel, as she became affectionately known, they had children.
They had not only children of their own, but they adopted quite a few children, some from family members and some just the orphans that were common at that time in our history.
Even to the numbers of in the 20s, I believe.
Yes, sir.
So this was a very fun and loving home, obviously.
Yes.
He had a ranch house known as the White House.
Right.
And I believe that was located at 38th and Trenton Avenue.
Right.
Then it was used as the area's first post office.
There was a shed on one side that was used as the post office, and Josiah was designated as the postmaster.
And Josiah lived on his farm 10 miles south of Tulsa as the postmaster.
Right.
This is like 1879, 80, 81 in there. Do you have any idea then the population of Tulsa?
Probably in the range, I'm guessing, somewhere around 500 to 700 people. You've got to understand that, especially with the advent of the railroad, this was becoming a commercial center. It was a center of trade, not only for the local tribal towns of the Muscogee, such as the Uchi that lived west across the river, the smaller towns that lived out on the Verdigris, Conchardy, and some of the other towns that lived down in the Bixby area. This really became a center of commerce for them. Intermittently, now not always dependably, but intermittently, depending on the season, there were even steamboats that were able to get up the Arkansas, not only to Tulsa, but even beyond.
And then Legas was the chief of the Creek Nation.
He was elected chief of the Creek Nation.
The brother of J.C. and George.
Right.
So these were three very strong leaders.
Legas continued to practice law in Tulsa even after statehood. George died on a trip into Kansas to sell cattle in either late 1898 or 1899, but not before he was one of the signatures on the original city charter for the town of Tulsa.
So then Moneta, your heritage, where does that go back to?
George and Rachel.
To George and Rachel.
Right.
Who would that be then from George and Rachel?
Their son was Mose. Mose's daughter was Edith, and Edith's daughter was Moneta.
That's not too far back.
No, it isn't. That's a close connection.
And Mose died in, well, my mother was born in 1901.
She was born in January of 1901, and he died in early February
of
1901.
He died right after that.
She was just a week or two old.
But then Rachel lived till 1933.
Yeah.
I remember when they buried her.
Do you have remembrances of George and Rachel?
Just Rachel.
What do you remember of her?
I remember going to that house there on Rockford or Trenton, whichever it was. My mother would go, and my aunt would go in and visit with her. And we would all play in that little creek, and I still can't find that creek there. But they told us there was quicksand in it, so we were very careful. I think they told us that to keep us out of the water. But we played in it anyway. I drive up in there sometimes and try to find the creek. It was situated different. There's no creek there now.
But you were awfully young then when yes. Rachel was around, 4, 5, 6 years?
Well, I guess I was about 10 when she died. So
do you remember being around her?
Yes, and not too much, because when we'd go visit her, my mother and aunts would all go in the house and we'd play outside. But I remember on her back porch, there was a great big jug of Sofki, which is pretty potent, pretty strong after it sits there a while. When the men came in from work or whatever they were doing, they'd always drink some Sofki. It fermented and it was so strong, it was like coming in and having a drink.
What was it?
Sofki is flint corn or hominy that has been cracked. It's been soaked in a mixture of water and lye and boiled, and it's allowed to sit and soak. Because it's cracked, it soaks up the mixture very quickly. It's eaten almost like a soup.
They always had a dipper in that big jug on the back porch.
It becomes real thick because of all the cornstarch.